Most of you picked 4-1. Second most picked 5-2. Only a few picked 3-8, and only one picked 2. So I will give her extra credit for taking on a harder verse. And the few who did 3. Now, I'll read them over, but I'll put them in order. I put them in order. That way I'll open my Bible to it. I don't have any plan. I'm just going to look at it, see what all you put in. If you put enough, if you hit a number of the highlights, if not, I'll mention in there what you put in. So it's a good exercise to read the scriptures and to see what the scriptures have for us. So hope it was a good exercise for you. Okay, let's talk about the book of Nahum. Before I do that, are we recording yet? We're not recording yet. We are recording right now. I need to read off 3 prayer requests, so that's okay, people out in CD land will get them anyway. One from is kind of a continuing story of what happened to Nineveh. As you recall, Jonah was sent to Nineveh with a message sometime in the 700s B.C., and he brought a message. He said, you know, you're a cruel people. We didn't say that. He just said, yet 40 days and you're going to be destroyed. God said, go to that people, give them this message. Of course, Jonah, the book of Jonah is mostly about Jonah. However, it did tell you one of the miracles that Jonah preached. And the people repented. And it didn't say they just said, oh, God, we're sorry. You know, don't punish us. They said, we're going to stop being so evil. But apparently that didn't last for too long. So God did see their heart, see their attitude, and he relented from what he planned to do to them. However, they persisted in their evil ways. So the date of the book of Nahum is between 663 and 612. And the reason we can date that with that certainty is that it does refer in the book of Nahum to the fall of Noamon or Thebes. Talks about the fall of Noamon or Thebes in Egypt. And that particular city fell in 663 B.C. So it's referred to as kind of a recent event. Oh, yeah, are you any better than Noamon that, you know, was taken down? He talks about that in I believe it's chapter 3. Are you any better than Noamon, chapter 3, verse 8? So we have a pretty good date there, and we know when it fell, 612. The name? Date 663. 663 B.C. and between then and 612. The book of Nahum is not quoted in the New Testament to our knowledge, to anybody's knowledge, to find any reference to Nahum in the New Testament. It is a prophecy against Nineveh, and it flows rather quickly. Chapter 1 talks about the greatness of God, which is a theophany. The appearance of God. When God appears, what is he going to appear like? And it talks about the strength and might and power of God and the majesty. Chapter 2 talks about the judgment of Nineveh, why Nineveh is going to be taken down. And number 3, the third outline, chapter 3, destruction and why. Why is he going to be destroyed? And talks about even some specifics as to how. Nahum was an Elkoshite. And there, in the book of Robinson's 12 Minor Prophets, he brings out several possibilities. The one that seems to make the most sense is that he was an Elkoshite. Some think he was an Israelite, but again, thinking that the Israelites were taken into captivity unless they missed him or he returned to warn Judah. This is a book about warning about what's going to happen in the fall of the Assyrians. But there's also some reference to being Judah being protected, and being at 663, Israel had already fallen. So some say he's a prophet from Israel, but as brought out by Robinson, he feels that Elkosh at various, they don't know where that is really, but he puts some possibility that it was down in Judah. Regardless, he is prophesying to Judah about what's going to happen to the Assyrians. The Assyrians had already overtaken Israel by this time. They were a very cruel people. I'll read some comments about that in a moment. And Nahum gives some very exact descriptions of the events of the time. And he does it in such a beautiful poetic style that the way they coin him, the phrase they use in Robinson for Robinson's book for Nahum. They call him Nahum the prophet. Sorry, the poet. Nahum the poet. Because he writes such beautiful poetry, and apparently his use of Hebrew, you couldn't tell by me because I don't read Hebrew, but apparently his use of Hebrew was excellent. So he had very good usage of Hebrew. Now, what was he writing about, and why was he writing? In the book, in Robinson's book, page 110, which you don't have, but I'm going to read it to you, page 110, he talks about the city and the people. He said, Nineveh, the city lay on the eastern side of the Tigris, opposite the modern town of Mosul. It was founded by Nimrod of Babylonia. So it's a long-time city, Genesis 10, verse 11. Founded by Nimrod, was especially dedicated to Easter. It was the capital of the Syrian kings from 1100 to 880 BC, and again after Sennacherib became king in 705 BC, being regarded as, in fact, the chief city of the empire. It was trebly fortified by walls and moats, forts and towers. So it had several means of protection. Big, thick, high walls. It had moats. And it also had these forts and towers there. The walls being 7.5 miles in circumference. So these big, thick walls circling main part of the city. So broad that three chariots could drive on their top abreast. It's a huge wall. Three chariots. And that's that thick that they could ride across there. Such was Nineveh, the capital, and listen what he says, the capital of the most powerful, sensual, ferocious, and diabolically atrocious race of men that perhaps ever existed in all the world. Now that's a pretty horrible castigation on any people. But he said, and again, in that town, in that city, they had 1,500 towers, like 1,500 skyscrapers back then, maybe 200 feet high. Some say 20 stories high, 200 feet high. Still pretty good, pretty impressive for them back then. Such were, and then he goes on to say, they were great besiegers of men, saying, siege, siege, siege. So they would surround a city and just starve it out, just wait, and wait for its water supply to run out, wait for its food supply to run out, and then they would come in and take them. So they were always saying, let's lay siege to this, let's lay siege. They were great siegers. But Nahum declares the besiegers of the world will at last be besieged themselves. Chapter 3, verse 1. Nahum's threats were remarkably fulfilled. He goes on to talk about some of the last king, the Medes and the Persians. They first razed all the surrounding fortresses, and then they beleaguered the city. The Ninevites, of course, they were taken down by the Medes and the Babylonians. The Ninevites proclaimed a fast of 100 days to propitiate their gods. Nevertheless, the city fell. Remember what they did when Jonah came, when they were under threat, Jonah 3:15. One of the writers describes how the last night of the besieged city was spent in drunken orgies. Well, we can't do anything about this, so let's just get drunk. Isn't that the way people are today? When they combat their problems, they get drunk. Getting drunk doesn't really help you solve your problem. It just gives you another problem that you'll have to face when you wake up. Doesn't get away with it at all. Drunken orgies in which the effeminate king set the example to precipitate the catastrophe. Here's what had happened. The Tigris overflowed. So they had these walls and these, but it was such heavy rains and floods that the Tigris overflowed and gradually wore away the walls, broke holes in the walls, and they were able to come in and take them that way. He said, whereupon the king, seeing the fate impending, he burned himself alive in his palace. Chapter 3, verses 15 to 19. The city was, of course, subsequently plundered of its rich spoil. Chapter 2, verses 10 to 14. It fell in 611, some say 612, I say 6:12, they say 6:11, and who knows, because nobody was back there who's we could ask right now. Nineveh's destruction was made complete. All that remains today of the ancient city are two mounds, two tells, you know. There's a mound over there. And apparently, so complete indeed were Nineveh's ruins that Xenophon scarcely recognized the site, and Alexander the Great marched by. He was the great world conqueror. He marched right by, not knowing that a world empire was buried under his feet. He didn't even realize he was right there, right by what was a former world empire. So complete. Lucian wrote this, Nineveh is perished. There's no trace left where it once was. Gibbon, you know, Gibbon's Rome, Gibbon records that as early as A.D. 62, the city and even the ruins of the city had long disappeared. One of the travelers passed over the site. He didn't even know it. Only since Layard and Botta identified the site in 1842 has the city begun to be recognized by the modern world. I want to read one other thing about Nahum. It talks about general consent, Nahum is counted a master of Hebrew style. His supreme excellence is not his feeling, but his power of description, which for the fiery vigor, glowing color, dramatic impressiveness, and picturesque phraseology is unsurpassed. So he has lots of poetry in here to explain and talk about it. He said the message basically is one central idea. The theme is a prophecy of Nineveh's doom. Nineveh is going down. Let's see if there's anything else I want to share with you. Ashurbanipal was one of the most ruthless kings of the Assyrians. He was the one who stacked up lips and limbs of people. So after he killed them, he ripped off their lips, piled them up in stacks, so people could see, don't mess with me, or this is where your lips will end up. Good thing he didn't cut off eyebrows. We're safe. Michelle and I are safe anyway. No eyebrows will be taken off. Two times it is said, God is against them. Remember what we said, the one thing you never want to hear God say is, I am against you. You find that two times in chapter 2:13 and 3:5. And to go along with that, remember Hebrews 10:31, which says it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. When God begins to, if God has to step down and deal with you, I'm not saying deal with you for kindness. If he has to step in and deal with you, it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. Nahum is considered a master poet, and God waited 150 years to destroy Nineveh. He gave them a reprieve when they repented, but they were a diabolically ferocious people. Now, I don't believe they're the same people living up there now, because you have a lot of Arabs up in that area. I don't know that it's exactly the same people who are doing saber rattling out of Iraq. But I think the people of Iraq think they are. And I think they think that they have all this greatness. But really, we used to feel like, and still do, that the Assyrians moved on into Germany. And that's where your people are. And, of course, go look at World War II, who takes people and gasses them and burns them in the crematoriums and burns their very being out of existence. And how the raids that some of them did were ferocious. And some of them, I was told by people who had relatives in World War II, that sometimes what the Germans had to do, they had to get themselves almost drunk before they could go in and just slaughter people, because it was so unnatural to do the things that they were doing. Remember, we read about peoples that would scrape over people, that would thresh them with threshing instruments. Okay, next time, and it's brilliant poetry, but Deuteronomy 32:35 says, vengeance belongs to God. So we're going to see next time. I hope to cover the whole book next time, so I'll be going very, very rapidly through the book of Nahum as we see the destruction that God brings on Nineveh as a result of what they did. And one great lesson that we will get out of this book is that you will reap what you sow. You will reap what you sow. God says it's a living law, kind of the law of reciprocity. What you do to others is going to come back to you. All right, we'll stop there and wish you a good rest of the morning, and I'll see you this afternoon. I have to rush in. We'll be talking about the family.